Greetings, I'm Sue, and today is April 10th, 2026, and this is the Taunton Daily Gazette. First article, South Coast Rail Noise Problems. MBTA has $6.8 million planned by Dan Medeiros. The MBTA recently released its proposed capital improvement plan, a proposal for the next 5 years that it says has laying the groundwork for tomorrow's T. Almost $10 billion in spending is outlined in the MBTA's plans from fiscal 2027 to 2031, and about $35.3 million of that money is aimed at the South Coast and improving its new rail line. Residents dealing with noise near the train tracks can expect to see more funding to help keep things quiet. Beyond that, there may be funding for new coaches and improvements that could potentially make the trip faster and cleaner. Here's what's in the plan. What is the MBTA's capital improvement plan? The CIP is a rolling plan that addresses transportation needs for the next 5 years. It doesn't only address the commuter rail. The T's subway system gets the bulk of the attention, with funding also for buses, ferries, and paratransit. Where does the money come from? Some funding comes from Washington via the Federal Transit Administration, which is part of the Department of Transportation. The state provides much of the rest. In recent years, the state has provided the MBTA with significant funding from the Fair Share Amendment, a voter-approved law that places a 4% surtax on incomes above $1 million. Fair share money can only be used for education and transportation. What can South Coast Rail expect? $9.8 million for track improvements to support hourly, all-day, bi-directional service on the Greenbush and Fall River and New Bedford lines. That would include track modifications at Middleborough Station and design work to double-track parts of the line's routes. Double-tracking is when a second set of tracks is built on the right-of-way, allowing train traffic in both directions at the same time. $12 million, that's for extending regional rail service to South Coast Rail. The MBTA has said it is working toward a regional rail concept, which emphasizes more consistent all-day service instead of just during rush hour, with quieter and cleaner electric trains. Under the regional rail concept, riders outside the Route 128 corridor could expect trains every half hour to hour. $6.7 million, buying 16 more train coaches to support expanded South Coast Rail service. $6.8 million, assessing noise along the South Coast Rail route and on improvements for residents when appropriate. The MBTA's noise mitigation program, which began with construction on the $1 billion project, is continuing as residents locally have complained of excessive noise and vibration from trains. The MBTA has posted its 121-page CIP on its website at mbta.com, along with explainers and previous CIPs going back to fiscal 2009. The MBTA also has an explainer on its regional rail plans at mbta.com. The public can comment on the CIP online until April 16th using its online comment form or by emailing cipengagement@mbta.com. Next article, Canine Cannoli. Spotted Hound Barkery has got you covered. Small businesses like this are often founded when two things converge. One, there's a problem, and two, someone aware of the problem wants to be the solution. Well, in this case, the problem was pup-centric. Melissa Jones's dog had a lot of allergies, like so many allergies. So Jones created a solution, and thus Spotted Hound Barkery, notice that R, was born. I figured I probably wasn't alone and that a lot of people were looking for a great meat-free treat, so I just decided to do it on my own, she said. Spotted Hound Barkery is a pop-up bakery, Barkery for pups. It was founded in 2023 by Jones, but since then her sister, Megan Welch, has joined in on the venture. All the ingredients they use are human grade, and they supply every item from the same grocery store as the rest of us humans get our own food from. The treats are all built on a base of whole wheat flour, and then depending on the type of treat, they vary from there. They've got crunchy cookies, pretty much your classic dog treat, in four flavors: peanut butter pumpkin, blueberry honey, and cheddar. There are cannoli made with peanut butter cookie recipe and filled with a dog-friendly frosting. There are cupcakes and cakes that are popular for gotcha days and birthdays. And there's popcorn, not popcorn, popcorn. That's just air-popped popcorn with no salt or butter that's topped with freeze-dried salmon or beef liver or peanut butter powder. We've heard a lot from people who love sharing their popcorn with their dogs. We figured that we would take out the things that they don't need to have or aren't good for them and give an alternative, Joan said. Everything they sell is real. The dyes in the frosting are natural, and the products are made in-house. There's no corn or anything that's not giving them any sort of nutrients, Welch said about the sister's line of dog treats. And if it makes you feel any better, I've tried every product that we make. This is a side gig for both Jones and Welch, so there's only so much time and resources they can put into it. But one goal that they've both thought about is getting those crunchy cookies in local mom and pop stores. Some days you're exhausted, Jones said. The last thing you want to do is go home and make bones for the next 2 or 3 hours. But once we go to the events and we see how many people come up and tell us that their dog loved the treats, it makes it all worth it. Being a pop-up, the Barkery doesn't have any defined hours. But in their 3 years of business, they've cemented themselves as mainstays at both the Hingham Farmers Market and the Middleborough Sip and Stroll. Follow the Spotted Hound Barkery on Instagram at Spotted Hound Barkery to see their updated schedule. Next article, U.S.-Iran ceasefire on tenuous ground. President Donald Trump's ceasefire with Iran was on tenuous ground on April 9th after Israel launched its deadliest day of strikes on Lebanon yet, and Tehran vowed not to desert its allies. A day after announcing the Iran war ceasefire, Trump took to social media to warn the country that if real agreement was not complied with, all U.S. military assets would remain in place, ready for a military response. He warned Iran to keep the Strait of Hormuz open and safe, but did not address the strikes in Lebanon in the post. If, for any reason, it is not, which is highly unlikely, then the shootin' starts, bigger and better and stronger than anyone has ever seen before, he wrote. Meanwhile, strikes on Lebanon, which borders Israel, came on April 8th, a day after United States and Iranian leaders announced a break in hostilities to hold peace talks and for oil shipments to the Strait of Hormuz to resume, a key breakthrough in the agreement. But in the wake of Trump's announcement, parties involved were soon at odds over whether the break in fighting included Lebanon. The Iran-U.S. ceasefire terms are clear and explicit. The U.S. must choose ceasefire or continued war via Israel. It cannot have both, Iran's Foreign Minister Syed Abbas Araghchi said in a statement as bombs hit Beirut. On April 8th, Israel carried out its largest bombardment of Lebanon since the start of the war, killing over 250 people, according to the Lebanese Health Ministry. While Hezbollah initially halted fire following the announcement of the ceasefire, it has since responded to the Israeli attacks by firing rockets at northern Israel. Israeli strikes killed between 180 and 260 people and left around 1,000 people wounded in Lebanon on April 8th, local authorities reported. The death toll in the country bordering Israel is the highest yet for a single day of the war. Lebanon's health ministry reported 182 deaths. The country's civil defense service reported 254. The two authorities reported around 1,000 people injured. Beirut saw the worst of the strikes. Israeli strikes killed 91 people in Lebanon's capital city, the civil defense service said. Residents said attacks came without warnings to evacuate. Videos shared by reporters of strikes on Lebanon's capital city show rubble sent flying as buildings were destroyed. Authorities in Tehran have posted flyers in stations in the city's train system, vowing that the country will not leave Lebanon alone, Iranian state media reported. The White House said that the strait has been reopened, while Iranian state media reported that the waterway closed following Iran's attacks on Lebanon. A USA Today analysis of ship tanker movements in the region found some ships moving through the channel, and this is Hasset Channel, but at significantly lower numbers than before the war. White House economic advisor Kevin Hassett on April 9th said Iran will allow more ships through the strait. They have said that they're going to start letting many more ships through, and we'll watch as the day progresses whether that's true or not, he told Fox News. Uncertainty over whether the ceasefire will hold comes as Vice President J.D. Vance and U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner prepare to head to Pakistan for peace talks in Islamabad. Hassan acknowledged the confusion over the ceasefire, but said he expects the round of in-person talks to clear up any remaining questions. A Pakistani source with knowledge of the discussion said Pakistan was working on a ceasefire for Lebanon as well as for Yemen, another country where Israel has hit Iran-aligned forces. It will be discussed during the upcoming talks, and we will settle it. Iran's Parliament Speaker Mohammad Bakir Khalibaf is expected to head the Iranian delegation. In the United States, eligible men and will be automatically registered into the U.S. military draft pool by December in an effort to streamline the existing self-registration process, according to the agency that oversees the system. This is the beginning of the automatic draft pool registration. On March 30th, the Selective Service System submitted a proposed rule for automatic registration to the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, according to its website. The new automatic registration process was approved by Congress under the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2026, which Trump signed into law in December 2025. According to the SSS website, the agency will implement the switch to automatic registration by December, creating a streamlined registration process and corresponding workforce realignment. Currently, eligible male U.S. citizens between the ages of 18 to 25 are required to register with the SSS. There has not been an active military draft since 1973, and returning to one would require Congress to amend the Military Selective Service Act, according to SSS. Sharp decline in strikes on Iran. The Human Rights Activist News Agency, a U.S.-based group that tracks human rights violations in Iran and has kept a running tally of war casualties in the country, reported a sharp decline in strikes in Iran as the ceasefire took effect. Some attacks were reported before its implementation time and, in limited cases, even after it took effect, the group reported. Nevertheless, the sharp decline in the number of incidents, targets, and casualties is clearly assessed as being linked to the implementation of the ceasefire. According to the group, there were 20 attacks on April 8th, down from 425 the day before, when Trump had threatened to wipe out Iran's whole civilization. Strikes on Iran have killed more than 1,700 civilians, according to the group. More than 1,200 military personnel have been killed. Another 700 deaths remain unclassified. Next article, Middleborough Society to host variety show. The First Unitarian Universalist Society of Middleborough will host a variety show at 7 p.m. on May 2nd. The event is a collaboration with local faux radio station WSOM and will feature performances by the UU Players, according to a community announcement. The evening promises music and laughter, and attendees are encouraged to join friends and neighbors for the show. After the performance, guests are invited to the parish hall for desserts and an opportunity to discuss their favorite moments from the show, according to the announcement. Tickets are available in advance online for $25 at uumiddleborough.org. Tickets will also be sold at the door for $30. Children under 12 are admitted free. Limited scholarships are available, and requests can be submitted to pr@uumiddleborough.org. The First Unitarian Universalist Society of Middleborough is located at 25 South Main Street. The building is accessible. Next article. Taunton manufacturers get state visit. Two state business development officials visited Taunton recently to tour two manufacturers in the Miles Standish Industrial Park. Zenobia Muchala, Undersecretary of Business Strategies for Massachusetts, and Jennifer Menard, South Coast Regional Director for the Office of Business Development, visited the Fuchs Group and IQE. According to a community announcement, Fuchs is a lubricant manufacturer and employs 40 people in Taunton and is planning a grand opening in August. The company's products are used in Mars exploration, including the Perseverance rover, and the Artemis II space mission. IQE, which employs 60 people, develops and manufactures advanced semiconductor wafer products used in a variety of devices, from phones to cars. The visit was welcomed by Taunton Mayor Shauna O'Connell and OECD Director Jay Patakos. The city expressed appreciation for the official's visit, according to the announcement. Next article, Made in America vape products gain ground. The U.S. vaping market, long dominated by Chinese imports, is seeing an uptick of Made in America products in what some analysts and industry executives say is a reaction to the Trump administration's crackdown on unlicensed brands. The products suggest the multi-billion dollar industry is shifting marketing tactics under President Donald Trump's global trade salvos and a tougher approach to unlicensed vapes from U.S. authorities, especially against popular Chinese labels. The United States is the world's top market for vapes, coveted by major tobacco players like British American Tobacco, which estimated the market was worth around $12 billion in 2024. Most vapes globally are produced in China, and the devices are imported and distributed in the United States, often without formal permission from regulators. Since October last year, at least 8 new vape brands playing up their American credentials have appeared among the broad array of unlicensed labels available on U.S. shelves, according to Reuters analysis. Trademark documents and business filings show some of those 8 brands, all of which lack permission for sale in the United States, are controlled by U.S. firms, but at least 2 are Chinese or Hong Kong-owned. Pallav Mittal, an analyst at Barclays, said the vape companies appeared to be betting that the move would make their labels less likely to catch the eyes of customs officials on the lookout for unlicensed Chinese vapes at the U.S. border. That could mean the U.S. crackdown on the massive illegal vape market will have an even more gradual impact than major tobacco companies were hoping, he added. If the illegal players have found another way to stay in the U.S. market, then this shift from illegal to legal will probably slow down, Mittal said. The Food and Drug Administration declined to comment on whether there had been a shift toward U.S. production of vapes, but said it is illegal to sell unauthorized vapes regardless of where they are made. The website of one brand, Maxis Star, proclaims Vape American and shows the device emblazoned with stars, stripes, and a built-in the USA stamp. Reuters could not verify where the device is made. The Maxis brand is owned in the United States by Hong Kong-based River Mountain HK Tech, which also holds trademarks in China for sub-brands of Chinese vape maker Freemax, trademark documents show. Maxis Star, Freemax, and River Mountain did not respond to requests for comment. Another new label, One Tank, displays a stamp with an American flag and the phrase "Made in USA" on its packaging. It is controlled by a representative of Shenzhen One Vape Technology. Local business filings and U.S. trademark documents show One Tank and Shenzhen One Vape Technology did not respond to requests for comment. Reuters could not establish whether One Tank had any U.S. manufacturing sites. Some manufacturers could be trialing U.S. production or increasing their use of U.S.-made vape liquids to help lower tariff costs, said Stephen Zhu, an adjunct professor who follows the industry at Canada's University of Waterloo. Some small U.S.-based vape company Charlie's Holdings, Inc., in December opened its first U.S. factory to fill one of its disposable vape brands with e-liquid, citing supply chain disruptions associated with importing finished devices and consumer preferences for Made in America brands. Its annual report states that its disposable vapes are produced by a Chinese manufacturing partner. Targeting unlicensed vapes. Unlicensed vapes account for some 70% of U.S. vape sales, according to British American Tobacco, whose own devices have lost market share as a result. The FDA has licensed only 41 vapes for sale. As it launched a crackdown on unlicensed vapes last year, the Trump administration singled out Chinese devices. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and former Attorney General Pam Bondi said at a major vape seizure that China was profiting from dumping dangerous illegal vapes in the United States. The uptick in Made in America vape marketing reflects how U.S. consumers are regularly hearing from the Trump administration that products made in China are bad, said one vape industry consultant who works with Chinese firms. They are asked not to be named due to confidentiality agreements. Some tobacco companies say, without offering evidence, that the marketing trend reflects a pivot by Chinese rivals. Chinese trade data shows no drop-off in vapes exported to the United States from China, with shipments worth over $4 billion in 2025. Tadu Morocco, British American Tobacco CEO, said it was part of a move to get around state and federal regulations. Some of British American Tobacco's own products lack FDA licenses. As the administration increases enforcement, they get more creative, Morocco said. Next article, airline places new limits on power banks. Southwest Airlines said on April 7th it will limit passengers to one lithium portable charger on flights and ban them from being stowed in overhead bins to reduce risks of in-flight battery fires. The new policy on power banks is effective April 20th, and Southwest also said portable chargers are no longer allowed to be recharged using in-seat power. In March, the United Nations Aviation Agency, the Montreal-based International Civil Aviation Organization, said the use of power banks or portable rechargeable battery packs would be limited to two per passenger as part of new rules for using the devices while in the air, and it prohibited recharging the power banks during flights. Airlines such as Lufthansa Group and countries including South Korea had already been introducing restrictions on the use of power banks on flights following incidents like a fire on Air Busan plane in 2025. The ICAO normally sets global standards for aviation that are mostly approved by its 193 member states. The new specifications regarding power banks are effective immediately. In September, the Federal Aviation Administration issued a safety alert to airlines over risks from lithium batteries in aircraft passenger compartments, citing numerous serious incidents. The FAA said there were 97 battery incidents involving smoke, fire, or extreme heat on flights last year, up from 89 in 2024. Southwest said portable power banks must be stored in a passenger's under-seat carry-on or be with them. The airline said its new policy is being implemented to strengthen our ability to contain and mitigate lithium battery incidents, including reducing the risk of battery fires. Southwest said by mid-2027, its entire fleet will feature in-seat power, reducing reliance on portable chargers. Next article, U.S. bank profits set to rise on deals, but Iran war has fueled uncertainty and outlook. Large U.S. banks are set to post higher quarterly earnings on strong interest income and investment banking fees, analyst estimates show, though investors will focus on forecasts as geopolitical risks involving Iran add to macroeconomic uncertainty. Goldman Sachs will kick off earnings season for banks on April 13th. The largest U.S. lender, J.P. Morgan Chase, will report on April 14th along with Wells Fargo and Citigroup. Bank of America and Morgan Stanley will report on April 15th. The banks will report results for the 3 months ending March 31st, during which global markets swung as investors grappled with uncertainty tied to wars in the Middle East and Ukraine, volatile oil prices, and broader geopolitical risks. President Donald Trump said on April 7th that he had agreed to a two-week ceasefire with Iran less than 2 hours before his deadline for Tehran to reopen the Strait of Hormuz or face widespread attacks on its civilian infrastructure. Still, several companies sought large mergers and acquisitions before financing conditions changed, leading to outbursts of deal-making and trading activity. The highlight of the first quarter has been robust deal-making as nearly two dozen mega-deals worth over $10 billion were reached globally, along with 40 deals valued at over $5 billion, according to LCEG data. Jefferies analysts noted global M&A proxy fees of $11.3 billion in the first quarter, led by Goldman. Another focus on earnings calls will likely be the outlook for 2026 loan growth, especially commercial and industrial and commercial real estate, said Gerard Cassidy, an analyst at RBC Capital Markets. Federal Reserve data suggests commercial and industrial growth accelerated in the first quarter, but uncertainty regarding the Middle East war and the subsequent rise in oil prices could weigh on the outlook if conflicts is protracted, he said. In February, J.P. Morgan Chase said it expects investment banking fees and market revenue to log strong growth in the first quarter, easing concerns that a recent equity market sell-off has hit deal pipelines. Bank of America expects interest income to grow at least 7% and investment banking fees to climb 10% in the first quarter, its co-president Dean Athanasius said on March 10th. Citigroup CEO Jane Fraser said in March the bank expects mid-teens percentage growth in its investment banking fees and market revenue in the first quarter, as the Wall Street Bank sees strong activity in both divisions despite escalating global tensions. Wells Fargo expects loans to grow this year, betting on credit cards and autos, while momentum in mortgages will pick up, Chief Financial Officer Mike Santomassimo said in February. Next article, dog helps college students unwind during midterms. Exam season is always stressful. To get through it, sometimes you need an energy drink or an intensive group study session or a few minutes of patting a patient-friendly dog at the library. A long-haired German Shepherd named Grimm recently helped give University of Tennessee students a chance to de-stress during midterms. Grimm is part of Human-Animal Bond in Tennessee, or HABIT, which promotes the bond between animals and humans through animal-assisted therapy programs in places such as assisted living centers, hospitals, and schools, according to its website. The nonprofit is operated through the university's College of Veterinary Medicine and, established in 1986, is the oldest program of its kind in the state. For midterms, Grimm and his owner, Jordan Kaufman, a research data librarian and assistant professor at the college, spent a few hours at a campus library to offer students a little support. This event was in addition to Kaufman and Grimm's usual weekly habit visit to the Veterans Resource Center in another campus library, but it was at a time when students can benefit from that extra boost. "It made my day," said veteran Violet Lucas, who had just taken an exam. "It was very nice to come and meet a cute dog." Several students came by, with the most asking first to pet Grimm before enthusiastically giving him some attention. Kaufman chit-chatted with them warmly. She was drawn to the program because of the opportunity to connect with students and the mental health benefits it offers. "I just saw that there was a breakdown of barriers and the connection that animals can provide," she said. Kaufman is grateful for the option to share with Grimm and the second to be part of Habit with others. "He's just such a good boy. And every day he brings the Habit bandana with her." While Kaufman works for the university, there's no required affiliation to join Habit. "A good animal candidate enjoys working with people and is not flustered by regular activity. The application process includes a veterinary check and work with a behaviorist, practicing tasks such as going in an elevator, greeting someone in a wheelchair, and staying calm during loud, chaotic moments. That's all the time we have for today. I hope you've enjoyed listening to the Talking Information Center and the Taunton Daily Gazette.